This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're now listening to Ringgit and Cents, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kanesan. Warren Buffett is considered as one of the greatest investors alive and has reportedly achieved an annual average return of above 20% since 1965 through his firm, Berkshire Hathaway. So what can you learn from the Oracle of Omaha about investing? Well, to help me with this, I'm speaking with Rajan Devadasan, licensed financial planner with Manulife Investment Management Malaysia Berhad and CEO of corporate consultancy RD Wealth Creation. Rajan, welcome back to Ringgit and Cents.
Hi, Roshan. It's great to be back.
Always a pleasure to have you on the show, Rajan. Now, as investors, or maybe even budding investors, what's the first Warren Buffett lesson that you'd like to share with us here? The most important one in your view?
You know that old saying, give a man a fish and he eats for a day, teach a man to fish and he eats for a lifetime? I have been thinking about this particular question of yours for a while. And I actually think that the single most important lesson that anyone can pick up concerning Buffett is not just a single nugget. I think the wisest thing that each of us can do is to actually take advantage of Buffett's remarkable capacity to communicate difficult concepts in very, very clear English in a fascinating, interesting manner. And so therefore, I actually recommend all readers to go do a Google search on Berkshire Hathaway letters. Berkshire Hathaway is Buffett's investment vehicle. And Buffett actually has, or his team actually has, a page on the Berkshire Hathaway website, which is dedicated to giving everyone on the planet access to his letters. Now, Buffett took charge of Berkshire Hathaway when it was just a tiny failing textile New England company. And it's quite fascinating because in later years, when people ask Buffett about his biggest financial mistake, he actually says that it was buying Berkshire. We can dive into that in a while. But right now, I think the best lesson for everyone is do a Google search, Berkshire Hathaway letters. And even though Buffett's controlled the company since 1965, and I guess his letters would start around about 1966, on that page, you will find letters from 1977 all the way to 2019. Now, these are for the respective financial years, which means that the 2019 letter was actually released, I think, in February 2020. And in the early years, from 1977 to 1997, it's probably just print on HTML page or whatever. And from 1998, you gain access via PDFs. So what I would recommend is that anyone keen to learn about Buffett, download every single available letter and read them in chronological order.
So I guess the most important lesson here is to learn how to use the internet and get access to all of Warren Buffett's letters.
It's learn to learn. That's the issue. Learn to learn.
When we talk about Warren Buffett's wealth status, now he achieved deca-billionaire, which means $10 billion and above status at age 65. 9 years after hitting $1 billion, 17 years after hitting the $100 million mark, and around 30 years after hitting the $10 million mark. This really, I think, exemplifies a great example of the power of compounding. With each milestone, the gap became smaller. Rajan, what are your thoughts here?
I think what Buffett has done is unparalleled in the history of the world. In the intro, you said that in your opinion, Buffett is one of the greatest living investors. In my opinion, he's the greatest investor of all time. Buffett started accumulating his money at the age of six, as in 6 years old. He was born August 30th, 1930. That tells you what kind of a big Buffett fan I am. So I know his birthday. So he was 6 years old, and he, his parents allowed him to go out and sell stuff. So he started off selling Wrigley's chewing gum first. And then he decided that he'd probably get better margins from selling bottles of Coke. And so from the age of 6 to 11, He did all kinds of things. He worked very hard. He had a newspaper route, I think, and he accumulated money. And at the age of 11, Buffett made his first capital market investment. He bought a few shares of something called City Service Preferred Shares, I think, something along those lines. And he just began to grow and grow and to learn. His approach to investing, particularly to value investing, took time to actually be formed. And you know, we can talk about, you know, the important influences in his life later. But I just think it's amazing. You know, I did a little bit of checking at the Bloomberg billionaire site, and he was ranked the sixth wealthiest person in the world. Now you got to ask yourself, well, why, in my opinion, if he's only the sixth wealthiest person, do I think he's the greatest investor of all time? I think part of it is because of his capacity to communicate and to actually teach. And so it isn't just a case of an investor amassing wealth for himself. Countless people around the world have become wealthy because they had learned about Buffett early enough to begin their own investment journey. And Buffett is also, I mean, every year he gives away billions of dollars. But Buffett for a long, long time realized that if he began his philanthropic journey too early, then he would actually be short-circuiting the capacity to amass wealth. But once he got to, let's just say, plenty of money, and his thinking about this really began to morph. Now, I'm not terribly sure, but I think this sea change in his thinking took place round about 2006, but you may want to double check that. And Buffett, I think, decided that there's no reason to reinvent the wheel. Not only that, his capacity to figure out who should get his money, he admits, is fairly limited. And that's why he thinks it's much better to fork out huge amounts of money to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, effectively, I think, like doubling the size of the foundation so that billions of dollars can flow out to major projects. For instance, Gates is trying to wipe out malaria. I think that's a big, big deal. So, you know, I'm very, very impressed with Buffett, and his upward trajectory has been amazing.
But you know, Rajan, when we take a look at that upward trajectory, right? And we've pointed out here that at different points in time, he hit different milestones according to his billionaire status. Now, I'm not saying that no one here can become a billionaire, but most of us are likely to retain in the middle class, upper middle class, that sort of situation here. But the example here, I think it sets, is that wealth accumulation compounds over time, and that I think we shouldn't be discouraged at an early age if you haven't achieved a certain level of wealth, right? It takes time to build this up.
Absolutely. I fully agree with you. And even if we're not particularly young, and you know, you only come to your senses, let's say, in your 40s or 50s or even 60s, thinking, you know, I've wasted so much time and I haven't accumulated real wealth, there is always hope, particularly if you are fortunate enough to be enjoying the work that you do and you really have no desire to retire. Obviously, this is much easier for those of us who own our own businesses and have taken the time and trouble to very carefully craft the structure of our businesses so that we love what we do. That's another very, very valuable lesson that I have learned from Warren Buffett, just reading about the way that he structured his life. I want to just give you the title of another very good book on Buffett, and that is his friend Carol Loomis's book, Tap Dancing to Work. And that phrase, tap dancing to work, that is what Buffett does. He loves his work. He's 90 years old. There's a joke he actually put, I think it's in one of his shareholders' letters, where he hopes to keep working until the age of 100, and he only plans, and then an alternative phrase, I think, he only plans to retire 5 years after his death. then he said that he's informed, this is all a joke, of course, I don't want people to get freaked out about it. But he said that he actually had installed a Ouija board so that his board would be able to communicate with him even after he's gone on. But jokes aside, Buffett loves his work, but he also is aware that the clock is ticking. And I think that's why he decided to very wisely begin the process of distributing his vast wealth.
Rajan, we'll be back in just a little bit to continue talking about Warren Buffett. I've been speaking with Rajan Devadasan, the licensed financial planner with Manulife Investment Management Malaysia Berhad. Keep you here to Ring It and Sense on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Ring It and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kanesan. This morning, I'm speaking with Rajan Devadasan, CEO of RD Wealth Creation, and we're talking about Warren Buffett. Rajan, oftentimes when Warren Buffett is brought up, one of the terms that's commonly associated with him, and you brought this up earlier during the interview, is value investing. Now, the goal of value investing is to seek out stocks that are trading for less than their intrinsic value. I guess the general idea here is to buy a stock for less than it's worth. What are some ways to calculate or determine the intrinsic value of a stock, Rajan? Because this is not a very, let's just say, obvious thing.
It isn't. Over the years, as I have delved deeper and deeper into value investing, I have read Buffett's thoughts on it, but I've also gone further back to Buffett's primary mentor, and that would be Benjamin Graham. Benjamin Graham is known as the was known as the Dean of Wall Street, and he was he's also quite accurately called the father of security analysis. Now, the Great Depression began with the collapse of the New York Stock Exchange in October 1929. Benjamin Graham, as an investor, as a fund manager, was very, very interested in figuring out how to separate the wheat from the chaff. Now, the capital market comprises the ownership market and the loanership market. Stocks and bonds. And certainly prior to Benjamin Graham, bonds were deemed to be far more respectable, and only fly-by-night operators would try and pump and dump stock offerings. So Ben Graham, between 1929, I think, and 1934, worked to put together this amazing body of knowledge that went into his book, what eventually became the first edition of Security Analysis. And the writing is amazing. Ben Graham wasn't just someone who understood maths and understood investments. He was also a classical scholar. And if anyone can get his or her hands on Security Analysis, edition one, 1934, you should. Now, in 1949, I think, Ben Graham came out with another book called The Intelligent Investor. So coming back to your original question about value investing, what I picked up first from Buffett, and then I did a retro learning dive, if you like, and I found out that it actually came from Benjamin Graham, was something called margin of safety. Now, this is the deal. So Benjamin Graham decided that he was going to use a whole series of metrics to figure out how do you value a company. Now, when we talk about stock investments, there is a very important numerical quantity, and that is the market capitalization. Market capitalization is calculated by taking the price per share and multiplying by the outstanding shares. Now, when the stock market drops and a share price drops, then the market capitalization would obviously shrink. And when the stock market flies, then the market capitalization will rise. But let's say over the span of a year for a decent-sized Malaysian company, let's say the market capitalization actually fluctuates between 5 billion ringgit and 12 billion ringgit over the course of a year. But you run your analysis and you decide that, I think the company is worth 8 billion ringgit. When the price drops from 9 to 8 to 7, then if you think that the valuation is at 8 billion ringgit, but the market capitalization is now at 7, you have a 1 billion ringgit margin of safety. If the price drops some more to 5 billion, let's say, you've got a much larger margin of safety. Now, the problem, however, is it's difficult to figure out what the intrinsic value. In my hypothetical example, I use 8 billion ringgit, right? But it's difficult to figure out what the intrinsic value is. But then there is an example, and I don't know whether it comes from Ben Graham or Warren Buffett, where, you can look at an individual and without knowing how heavy he or she is, you can easily say this person is overweight or underweight. And that's pretty much the same thing. Let's say you can see that a person is underweight, excessively skinny. And let's say you're looking at a company and you know that, you know, more or less the margin of the intrinsic value should be around $8 or $9 billion, a ringgit. And let's say the market cap is at 5, then you know you've got a huge margin of safety. And the larger your margin of safety, the more likely it is for you to actually be able to invest wisely. And if you get your purchase right, then you can actually take off. It is really, really very important. I guarantee you, we would not be talking about Warren Buffett if Benjamin Graham had not lived and had not become his mentor. I cannot overemphasize that anyone who's interested in learning about Warren Buffett should actually do a deep dive into Ben Graham's writings. But those who actually are able to grab the lessons in Buffett's teaching, those who are able to do a deep dive into Graham's teachings, I think we actually have a much better chance of building companies, businesses of our own that will actually stand the test of time, that will allow us to accrue great wealth. And so that when the time comes for us to do our own legacy planning, you see, a complete financial plan should have three parts: wealth protection, wealth accumulation, and wealth distribution. Buffett obviously was amazing when it came to accumulation, and his distribution plan is to give it all away or give most of it away. He will actually end up giving 99% of his net worth in due course. So for all of us, even those of us who, you know, our ultimate goal is several zeros short of Buffett, I think if we can first learn to become more effective and efficient economic entities, we will be able to accrue and build well and then give back to society.
Rajan, that's actually a really great lesson to, I think, and that's the key lesson, I think, to learn from Warren Buffett, right? Just taking a look at the example that we talked about earlier with his trajectory, there it is an ascending curve, right? It does steepen as time goes on, which once again shows us the power of compounding. And if we focus on our economic prowess at the beginning and hopefully and invest that money over time, that we can do that for ourselves or build our own businesses if that's the way you go about it. But, you know, that's it, Rajan. You know, there's a lot to learn about and from Warren Buffett and his own mentors. And I don't think that there's anything that anyone that can dispute his success over his lifetime. But, you know, when we take a look at the more recent history here, let's say the last decade, Buffett's track record has been, well, average to say the least, especially when you compare it to his track history. And over the last 10 years, Berkshire has actually slightly underperformed the S&P 500 on a total return basis, including reinvested dividends. Do you think he's lost his magic at this point in time?
No, I don't think so. One of the problems is that Buffett, as he became wealthier and wealthier, and as the stock market has morphed and changed in many ways, Buffett has never, ever been willing to compromise on his valuation metrics. So I don't think it's a case of Buffett losing his prowess. One of the ways that you can actually tell if someone is really slowing down and if mental acuity is disappearing is to check the quality of writing and the quality of thinking reflected in that writing. And that's another reason why I think people should go and continue to read his letters. But since Buffett has become so big and his investment vehicle is actually Berkshire Hathaway, I think in March of this year, Berkshire Hathaway was sitting on $140 billion just cash, because Buffett couldn't find places to park the money. And in recent decades, he's been joking about the fact that he has to go elephant hunting, because for the dial to be moved for Berkshire, he has to buy something super, super huge. And obviously, when your level of wealth becomes a significant or discernible fraction of overall US GDP, things become difficult. So I don't think Buffett's lost his touch. I think what has happened is inevitable simply because he's become too big. So someone who follows Graham's and Buffett's approaches and has a lot less money can actually invest in smaller amounts and still rake in percentage gains that are significant.
I think that's a great point there, Rajan. It's kind of a base effect, really, if you think about it. He's gotten to a certain point where compounding has helped him a lot in the past. But now when it comes to new investments at his size, $140 billion in cash is a lot of money. And that's only the cash he has on hand, right? He's got a lot more investments.
Yes, and correct. And remember, that cash, $140 billion, was pretty much parked in US paper. And that paper's yielding like nothing. So that also would form a drag. But yeah, there are people who say that, you know, I've got money in my pocket, it's burning a hole, I'll just invest anyway. And Buffett would never do that.
Rajan, on that note, thank you so much for spending some time with me this morning.
You're very, very welcome, Roshan. I had a great time, a lot of fun. Thank you.
I've been speaking with Rajan Devadasan, licensed financial planner with Manulife Investment Management Malaysia Berhad. And remember, with all possible investments and strategies, you have to do your own homework, keeping your risk profile and financial goals in mind. You've been listening to Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Karnason for BFM 89.9.
Ringgit & Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.